Since we're running a little bit behind, I would like to call this Courts and Public Safety meeting to order. We're going to go ahead and start our new business, which is we're going to begin with Administrator Higgins with an animal shelter update.
Animal shelter update. We are very, very close to opening. Since last month we made the progress we did. I know last month I talked about we needed concrete work and the asphalt work, and we were waiting on weather. We got about a 3-day weather break and got the concrete work finished. So that is, if you've been by there, that is the two sides, this concrete pads where we'll have the outdoor kennel. And so the posts were set for the fencing. Then we had to come in and do the concrete work with that dry. Then we can come in and do the fencing. So both the concrete work and the fencing has been completed. So the kennels are done. Concrete work is done. The road department went out there and finished dressing up the parking lot. We were ready to hit it. And then we had the weather move in 2 days faster than we were expecting. So we had to hold off, and now we're in a holding pattern. We need 2 or 3 days of 45-degree sunshiny days. Then we can put the asphalt on. So they're on standby, ready to go out there and get that part of it done. In the meantime, the Animal Coalition group is, even though we do not yet officially have the keys to the shelter, it's not been turned over from the contractor yet, they're great to work with. So we're letting the Animal Coalition work in there. They're setting up equipment. I was in there yesterday. They were setting up the surgical equipment and the lights and those kinds of things. We were doing some modifications to a fire alarm system where the alarm system is actually activating where the animals are located, and we don't need that. So we have some provisions to help make some programming changes to adjust that. But it's moving forward. If we get the weather to break, we'll be ready to go. We had a meeting with the coalition board this morning to talk about finance process, how they do their bills, and how we will pay them and reimburse them for their issues. And I asked them, I said, when I call you and say we're ready, how long until we can snip the ribbon and open the place up? Did y'all get that, snip the ribbon? Until we can actually do a ribbon cutting and be ready to go. And they said, we're probably ready in 2 weeks from the go time. So everybody's on T-minus 2 weeks right now waiting to finish that up. I know the community's ready, we're ready, sheriff's office is ready, and we're ready to get that done. We'll let you guys know as soon as we're ready for that. We'll probably plan just this preliminary, a 2-day deal, probably a ribbon cutting on one day, and then a Saturday opening so that people who work can have the opportunity to come in and see it and tour it and see what it looks like. So we're looking forward to that. Any question? Okay, Justice Coates.
I think that's all I've got too. I've been very impressed with not only the coalition and the new employees of the coalition that are putting everything together, but the way in which the sheriff's department, the judge's office, the court, again, everybody coming together. It has been a long haul, and we are so close, and it seems to be coming together pretty well, and just very much needed, and we're well on our way. All right, the next item of business is the coroner's equipment report.
So I'm going to do kind of an update for the coroner on a couple of things. We're just going to do kind of coroner's night tonight, so several different items. One thing I want to start off with, and you guys can be looking at this, but we have developed a coroner's report. So that, if you recall, the sheriff's department gives a report every month, does a good job with that. We were just blatantly copying off of that. But what does the coroner, what's a lot of the activity they do? So I know, because I've been dealing with the coroner on a daily basis, and but what is a lot of runs for the coroner's office? Is 100 runs a month, is that a lot? I don't know. So just like with the sheriff's department, when you look at 1 month of activity, that's just a number. But when you see a number of months in a row, and you see the activity move up and down, you can actually track good months, heavy months, weak months, as far as for the activity or things. So we're trying to provide that report for you guys as well.
I'll pass out a copy. Sorry.
I have one left over.
You like that one?
There you go. You have to share it with the other JPs.
Okay. So the reason I'm bringing up in courts of public safety, I just kind of wanted to get your feedback when you look at this. Is this something that you would find of interest or not? When I talked with our coroner, when I talked to Jessica about this, I wanted to develop a report that she had information that was readily available. That, and I told her, I said, look, if we're spending more than 15 or 20 minutes a month in this, we're doing it the wrong way. I don't want to have to dig through information that's not readily available. So as we were developing this, this is primarily the things that we track on here. You can see that they have three full-time employees, three part-time employees. And then of the categories, these are the responses. So they had 127 deaths for the month of January. The various categories from natural, long-term care, inpatient, infant, fetal demise, accident, suicide, homicide, pending autopsy. So that was one, as I went through this, so what does that mean? Well, that means that we had to send one to the crime lab, and it's being autopsied. This person died this month, but we don't know what they died from yet. So once the autopsy is done, we'll know that's a pending. And then there's overdose. So 127 total. So I'll go back to my question. Is 127 a lot? When I looked at Jessica, she said, yes, 127 is a lot. As we track these, maybe next month is 90, maybe the following month it's 70, and then it's back up to 100. After several months, we'll be able to see the activity that they're having. One of the questions that I have, I asked her, and I said, so do you run more calls at night or more in the daytime? And she said, well, I think we run more at night, but that's a number that we're going to put on here as well. So you can see that of the 127, 49 of them were in what we're calling daytime hours, and 78 of them were in after hours. So we'll be able to track those there. So let me ask the committee, is this something that you guys would find useful that we can provide on a monthly basis? And is there anything else that you might like to see that maybe we could help with? Sheriff, I'm sorry, Justice? That slipped out.
On accidents, it's showing two. Would that be combined motor vehicle accidents, like with farming accidents, or?
That's, anything from a fall to a vehicle accident to just about anything.
That would be interested in separating accidents and motor vehicle accidents. I mean, that makes sense.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Is that possible to put a motor vehicle, mm-hmm. separate that from accident? Okay. There you go. We can do that.
Mm-hmm. That's probably not going to be.
I'm curious what the difference is in long-term care and inpatient. Is it inpatient hospital versus long-term?
Long-term care is nursing home beds that we run. Inpatient is anything in the hospital that's in there every 48 hours that kind of orders off the song.
Yeah, so long-term care will be nursing home.
Say that one more time.
And then inpatient will be anybody that's in a hospital that's been there less than 48 hours. That would be inpatient. Now also, this is not all of the deaths in Faulkner County. So these are the deaths that the coroner's office report to. So there are some deaths that are declared by doctors. So that would be separate, that the coroner doesn't necessarily have to respond to. So we don't want to say that there was only 127 deaths. This was 127 that the coroner's office responded to.
Fetal demise, what is that?
Ask that again.
Fetal demise?
That's actually an infant death. Fetal demise is infant death.
So then what would that be the difference in?
With infant demise. Fetal demise is infant under 24 weeks, something like that, and anything over. If it breathes, like when it's born and it breathes,
it
becomes an infant.
When she's pregnant and loses the baby.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
On the overdose death, don't have any, so I'm assuming that means you didn't respond to any overdose deaths this month?
That month.
This month.
Okay. And is that something that might be like updated in the future if an autopsy was declared? Would that be retroactively updated for past months? Or how would that work? But I'm just curious, do you diagnose overdose deaths on scene? Is it something that we go in the report automatically, or would that depend on an autopsy?
So all overdoses have to be sent to the crime lab and state law. So normally, a lot of times we know an it's an overdose, that we have to let the medical examiner determine it is an overdose. So it might take several months to ever get that autopsy report back.
Okay.
So Justin, how we anticipate this to work is this particular one that says pending autopsy, that's a one. When that autopsy comes in and it is determined for that month, we'll probably change that back to zero and move it whatever the category is. So let's say hypothetically that's an overdose. So when she provides the February report, that number in January could change from zero and a one move down to overdose. Make sense?
Is there a way that we could separate this into minor deaths versus adult deaths? I don't know, that may be too much information. It may be personally identifier or something if you broke it down that far. But just curious about 18 and under, or, you know, those, the number of deaths for children, basically, is what I'm looking for.
See, I told you we might create a monster here. We will look at that.
Okay.
And see if we can do that. I'm going to make a note of that. For overdose, right?
No, just for, we just chop on time, basically, what I'm looking for. Just, I mean, how many deaths?
Oh, okay, how many overall are, yes. so pick an age where you look, 18 and under?
Under 18 and under, we're talking about, whichever it is, get that off.
Juvenile or adult.
Okay.
What's that?
Juvenile or adult.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll look at that. All right, good feedback. Jay, just for Paul.
Thank you, sir. I'm just wondering about splitting up the overdose into fentanyl versus other categories of events, if that's possible. When you see overdoses, is it mostly fentanyl that you see?
No.
No? Okay, yeah.
Some of it's due to mixed with methamphetamine intoxications. Fentanyl, I think we've had.
I don't want to drastically increase your workload, but I do appreciate this. I think good. This is going to be good stuff, and I appreciate y'all doing that.
Okay, good. Thank you.
So I guess my question is when is the coroner actually called out to do this? Because you mentioned that if it's in the hospital and the doctor declares it, it's not going to go on the report. So I'm kind of curious as to how that determination is made.
Oh, that's a fair question. Come on up here.
I'm sorry. I guess we could have talked about this offline, but I'm
just not sure. Just basically, when are you called as opposed to a doctor?
Okay, so in the hospital, if they're in there over 48 hours, we're not notified of that death, unless it's like a shotgun wound that they kept on an event, say, for 48 hours, and then they die, then we're contacted on that. So anything other than a natural death, I guess it would be if they fell, say, from a roof and lived for 48 hours, was put in the hospital, they'll contact us on those because it's an accident, suicide, or something like that. But if it's just like a 70-year-old man that has a history of diabetes, hypertension, something like that, and he's in there for over 48 hours and they don't contact the coroner because a doctor is there to pronounce the death.
Does
that help?
It helps. Thank you.
You got
it.
Great
job.
All right. Good. All right. Any other questions? Very good. We'll work on this and see, that's the feedback we're looking for. Yes?
Yeah, I have a question. Okay. And maybe this is for you too. So a lot of this data here helps us understand what you do. But I'm also interested if there are statistics you can provide about kind of how you're doing it. Like, what are things that describe, or maybe things you with your team are tracking about, like, how well your office is functioning? You know, if there's a, I don't know, I'm thinking in terms of public safety, you know, minutes it takes to respond to something. Like, what are the things that mark your office as doing a good job, you know, doing the things you want to be doing versus, like, struggling at something?
So I can help answer that. So as we were developing this, we looked at a lot of things. And we really brainstormed, and I would ask questions, and it would be two questions. Can we report that, and how long does it take you? And so one of the things that I was actually interested in is, how long does it take you on a call, and what is the average call length? And in the conversation, it was like some of them are hours and hours. and some of them are less than that. But that's to get that information. There's a lot of individual calls you have to go through there and add up the time and all that. And we started going, it's like, yeah, that'd be nice to know, but I don't want you spending 6 hours a month helping us develop the report. So let us look at that and see about some of the productivity things on that. But we kind of wanted to start somewhere. And I think the number that we do each month, I think that will be very telling as we go forward. And it may get to the point where we start seeing trending, and the trending gets up to where it's consistently 120, 130, 140. It will be easier for the coroner to be able to come in here at some point for the personnel committee and say, I don't think my 3 and 3 is going to get it, because you can see the trend. As we are right now, if the coroner came to us and said, I need 3 more people, and we say, and 127 is a lot or not? We don't. You're telling us that, but we don't know that. But she should be able at some point to come in, just very similar like the sheriff's department can come in and we can track their numbers and say, yes, the issue is this many more, and this is why we're asking in our justification for additional resources, whether it's people or whether it's equipment or anything like that. So I think this will start telling the story, and then as we go along, we can start adding things. Does that help to answer the question? All right, so with that said, let me just share a couple more bits of information. I'll move on next. So I have a memo here that came from the coroner's office, and it actually came in while we were working on this, and this one was important enough that we went ahead and passed it out to law enforcement in all of Faulkner County. I just want to share it real quick with the county, and I'll kind of skim through it. We sent the memo out, but Faulkner County coroner's office workday death of a 40-year-old male subject in the city of Lenox Conway in the autopsy. This death occurred in October. We just got the autopsy report last week. That's how long it takes. This is not CSI or NCIS. We don't get it in the next murder. It takes a while. But anyway, the autopsy of the subject revealed that the subject overdosed from fluorofentanyl. So if you're not familiar with fluorofentanyl, it's classified as a fentanyl analog and a novel opioid. Fentanyl analogs modified based on the structure of fentanyl, and fentanyl analogs have been reported to cause, yeah, that's way too much stuff. But basically, then we'll get to the point. Fluorofentanyl is a potent synthetic opioid that has been linked to at least 16 deaths in the United States, and it is twice as potent as fentanyl. So you think about this, for those of us that have been through the training to deal with fentanyl, oftentimes it's in a powder. So you have a limited amount of time to use the Narcan if you're infected with it. If it's twice as potent, that means the response time is significantly reduced if you're exposed to this more critical stuff. And it is relatively new to the United States, and this is the first case that has been reported in Faulkner County. So as we were talking about this, we were talking about the potential hazards to it, and this particular scene had powder residue around exposed. So let's say a EMT, a volunteer firefighter comes in, they should be trained on how to gear up and put their nitrile gloves on, protect themselves, mask, all that. But if they rub against it while they're picking up a body, and they get it on the elbow of their jacket, and then they help the coroner load it, and they get back in their truck, and they get their elbow on the armrest of the truck, and then they get back to the fire station, and they clean all their gear, but they get back in the truck with a short-sleeve shirt on and rub their elbow on it, they're probably dead in 30 seconds. That's literally the criticalness of exposure of this type of stuff that our first responders are exposed to. So just want to share that this was something that was evidenced by the coroner's office, that they report back to the field to let them know of the exposure potential for all of our first responders. Let's stop by mentioning that one to you. All right, so I'm done with coroner. No, I'm not. So here's something. So I don't have an ask for you tonight, but I mentioned to you in the budget season that we were asking for some funding for the Stryker gurneys. So the gurneys that the coroner's office is currently using right now are manual. So when they go and they have a gurney and they have to pick up a dead person, a deceased person, and they're 250, 300, 400 pounds, sometimes it's a challenge to be able to do that. They have to have the assistance of the EMT, sometimes the volunteer firefighters, get them on the gurney and then manually lift these up and then push them to the vehicle that we have, transport vehicle, and then manually get them in there, hold them up while they get the wheels up and then slide them in. So you guys approved funding for us to be able to get a Striker, which is what typically our ambulance services use. And so it's a power gurney that goes up and down, and then they can load it into the truck. Since then, we have been looking at potentially an additional assist device that helps minimize backing. So you're not going to understand what I'm talking about, but I have a couple of 15 or 20 second videos that demonstrates the Striker that we have that on the way. They're ordered, and so they're on the way, but how we currently load them into the vehicle and then how we have the opportunity to load them. At some point in the future, we will probably be asking for additional funding, but I want to show you what we're talking about. That is not tonight. So, Sarah, you go ahead and hit the button and show it. So this is, we had a victim. So this is our current method of loading the Striker. So the cool thing is, at least the wheels come up automatically. And I think this was Jessica's first time to use it, so we haven't been trained on it yet. Hit the button, there you go. See, it comes up. Before, we had to do all that manually. There we go, we got it in there. All right, so that is what we'll be doing with our Striker. Current device is all manual. At least it's automated on this one. So Sarah, go ahead and show us kind of where we would like to go at some point. And that'll be the next one. Literally at this time, Justice Coates was saying, y'all forgot about me in here.
I would like to get back out.
It's not like... So while we're getting ready for this, some of the reasons that we're talking about this is when we look at the potential exposure of our employees picking up this with back injuries, shoulder injuries, any of those kinds of things, it wouldn't take but one or two of those with missed time work, doctor's bills, workers' comp, and all this to actually pay for one of these devices that eventually we're going to show. It's not going to pay? Here's the new device, so watch this, it's pretty cool. Now you notice Jessica's not drunk at all on this one. So it reduces all of the exposure to back and shoulder issues on that. So there are some challenges that we're working through. This is where she's actually pulling her back out. And again, you can see very little effort. She's doing it one-handed. And we did not drop our victim on the floor. Actually, that's the challenge that we have right now is our vehicles that we're currently using, the new device may not retrofit into it. So we have a vehicle on order that we're looking at. We may have to get a longer bed. So we're not sure. We may be, I mean, literally inches too short. So that's why we're working through those technical difficulties until we come back and maybe ask for a request.
Probably what we may do is ask for just one vehicle, work out the kinks on everything, but that's several months down the road at best. But I just want to show it to you that, number one, Coroner's Office appreciates the strikers. Those are going to be a big plus. We have two of those coming. We have three vehicles. So, any questions about this? This is for information purposes. That's all I have on that.
Okay. One of the things that I was going to point out to Justice Yorkie as well, if you have any questions about the coroner's office or any of them, our coroner and the deputy coroner, all of them have been incredibly gracious. And I didn't know anything when I came on the court, and they let me do a ride-along, and you really can see exactly what they do and how their process works. So I encourage you to reach out to her and go and visit, because it's really eye-opening. I really have learned a lot just by poking my head in and asking some questions. So I'm going to do that.
Yeah. That wasn't an easy sale. We had to convince on that. Mr. Chair, I actually forgot one memo I'd like to cover.
Yes.
If I can work back to animal shelter for a second. I was actually going to let Chief Woolley do it, but when I showed it to him, he said, I haven't seen this one yet, so I'm actually a little ahead of him. But the sheriff... I was working with the sheriff today, and he gave this to me, wanted me to share this with the court. This is a memo that he sent to Mr. Spencer Clausen, the Director of Public Works and Code Enforcement for the City of Conway. Real quickly, dear Spencer, I wanted to thank you and commend your team on how they assisted with a dog incident that occurred on Tuesday, January 21st in Mayflower. This was clearly a very horrific, disturbing, and difficult situation. As unfortunate as it was, we could not have obtained the necessary outcome without the help of your team. It's always encouraging to me when the city and the county can come together for the betterment and safety of our communities and citizens. I cannot express enough how much I appreciate you and all your support in this very difficult incident. Very respectfully, Sheriff Tim Ryle. And this was over an incident that involves 13?
16 adult dogs.
16 dogs that at this point we just could not handle and reach out to the city. And they helped us. So just wanted to share with you that we've got a great working relationship with the City of Conway. The sheriff said that, and then we want to let the court know, let this committee know that we really appreciate the opportunity to work with you. There you go.
That's definitely a joint effort between rescue groups. I believe there were 16 adult dogs and 22 puppies on the property that had to be dealt with. Anyway. Okay, we're going to go ahead and move on to proposed ordinance 2507, transfer of county property.
Make a motion to book proposed ordinance 250717 for discussion.
Second. All right, I believe this is Ms. Darter brought this to my attention. Is there, she's not here.
She's at the County Clerk's Association.
Correct. And I believe you're up.
You want me to see?
Yes, please. You'll explain exactly what this is. And
Mr. Chair, this is we received much of our voting machines from the Secretary of State's office. We have more than we can house at this point. We've done some remodeling in the building over there. And so Montgomery County is in need, like emergency need, of these 8 machines. These are not machines that Faulkner County purchased, and we're just doing a transfer to Montgomery County. We've done this before. We actually have 15 more machines that we can transfer should another county come up with a need that were not purchased by Faulkner County. So that's the, Mount Ida needs the machines, so we want to transfer these to Montgomery County. Any questions?
We have done this previously too, correct?
We've done it before. And there's, like I said, even after these 8, there's still about 15 more that we could transfer.
Questions?
There's nothing wrong with these machines. We can use them. They're compatible with our system right now. We just don't have the space to store
them. We have not used these machines. They're perfectly new. We just haven't had, we haven't needed them because we have so many.
What about, keep me on track here. Don't let me get off track. Let's talk about voting day, right? Election machines, there's a lot of people. I've gone out to the McGee Center, and there's a line all the way around.
I can speak to that as the former chairman of the election commission. State law, the statute states you can only have the machines every 6 feet.
Yeah.
And so the space that those that were, you know, those vote centers are limited for how many we can put into the building. That's the limitation on most of them is, do we have the, but we have more machines, and a lot of times, you know, if one of them goes down, we'll have another one out there within the hour. So we have extra machines that we can use.
So the problem with the McGee Center is not that we don't have enough machines.
We don't have enough room.
Who's not allowing us to have enough room? Are we stuck
in one little room?
Yeah. Right, that's a big building.
Yeah,
they've got basketball courts and everything else.
The courts, yeah, the lighting over the courts, it's not really conducive. I mean, we could, like, we were using the other community center. There's just not, it's not conducive to the, you know, the flow with, it has to be ADA acceptable. Well, those courts are accessible, but the city doesn't like us walking our street shoes onto those courts. So that's why we use the other room over there. Now, there is another option, and I'm not on the election commission now, but the other option is to open up another vote center nearby.
I'd just like for us to do, and I think the Higgins has a court to do everything as possible to for there not to be lines when people go to vote. People should be able to go in there and vote.
I would agree.
I've seen people pull up, go inside, see the line, turn around and leave.
Yeah.
And you don't know if they're going to vote somewhere else or if they're just not going to vote at all.
I agree.
So I just wanted to, and I'm not getting on you. I just want to drill down to
the
issue.
Is, do we have can we get the poll workers? And we actually had a lot more poll workers volunteer this time. So, and the limit wasn't just poll workers, it was poll sheriffs. You know, we'd like to open up another facility out in West Conway. So that's I know that it's being talked about. But the machines are not the limitation.
Will they be a limitation if Conway decides that regular people can walk in off the street and walk on their beautiful basketball courts and vote? Will we have a limitation on machines?
No, we have as many as we can house, and it's cramped over there now. That we would like to get rid of 15 more, and we will still have enough.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Could you just, I think I remember hearing you maybe last month, maybe a couple months ago, but the remodel for where these machines are stored, that was for security purposes, to protect the machines and make sure that they weren't tampered with and address the concerns of citizens. Is that right?
That's correct. Yep. There's security cameras there now. A new door, a more high security door. Yeah, exactly right. Any other questions? Thank you very much, Ms. Chairman.
Thank you so much. All right, there's no additional questions. All those in favor of passing proposed ordinance 2507 onto the full court, say aye. Goes on to the full court. And our last item on the agenda is adjournment. I will entertain that motion. Thank you, guys. I think I'm going to